And one reason I especially wanted to be here today, I didn't want to miss this show, is that we have a guest in the studio. If you've been listening, if you heard about Tim yesterday, he would have told you who it was, and it's none other than Keoki Kahumoku.
Aloha!
Hey, Keoki.
Aloha, how are you doing today?
Hey, it's great to have you here all the way from the Big Island.
It's my pleasure, and thank you so much for having us here. And it's great to be in Santa Cruz, Watsonville, and here in the Bay Area. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, it's always great to have you around. Your music, your smile, your everything about you is just such a pleasure.
Thank you.
And who's just sitting over here behind me?
Oh, we got Eti Kapua over here.
Aloha.
Aloha, Kapua. I'm glad you made it.
I'm glad to be here.
Well, Keoki's in town for, you did a ukulele workshop and you've been doing some shows?
Well, I started off in last week. We were actually following and kind of in between the storm. I was up in Seattle doing some workshops up there, and then I did a concert with one of my students, Brittany Paiva. And so we'll actually be here in the Bay Area. We'll be doing a concert on Sunday up in Sebastopol. That'll be lots of fun. But the reason why I'm here right now in Santa Cruz and Watsonville is we're actually to promote our ukulele and slack guitar workshop that we do on the Big Island. And it's been really a wonderful time of sharing and experiences.
So, I know you've got, I've been reading about an event you've got coming up in southern part of the Big Island.
Yeah, on the Big Island of Hawaii in the district of Kau, we'll be spending about 8 days coming up from November 27th through December 5th in Pahala Town. And it's our annual event that we have all of my good friends, Ohana, come and share their knowledge with Kiho'olo, Hawaiian Slacky, ukulele, hula, Hawaiian language, Hawaiian chorus, lei making, lauhala weaving, food preparation. And basically it's a week-long event of sharing the island lifestyles and kind of sharing what I grew up doing. And we have a great time. And the reason why we do this event is so that we can continue to have music and art education there in Kau District, because, well, like many places, a lot of the programs have been cut all across the nation. And there in Kau, we're so remote and don't have much out there for the kids. So I kind of took it upon myself, along with some great friends and Ohana that helped us to envision this workshop, and then coming together and giving the kids an opportunity to not only learn, but also teach and share with us some of the things that they're growing up right now and doing. And of course, that's all part of the Hawaiian lifestyles there on the Big Island. I've been now, of course, many people know I was on the island of Maui for, I think it was almost 15 years with my dad, and I played music in the Lahaina and Kapalua area. And I was always inspired by the Naupio, or the youth, and I put together an ukulele contest that's now going on its 14th year, an annual contest that brings performers from Maui, Molokai, and Lanai. And two of my students that are on several of the albums, our compilation albums that have come across, are now running that ukulele contest, and they're also teaching in school and also teaching private lessons ukulele, as well as singing and slacky guitar.
Fantastic. It sounds to me like the only thing you're not doing down at that workshop and that cultural workshop is teaching people how to hunt pigs.
Oh, actually, we do. The week before, we have a hunter's education class, and that allows, a lot of the kids out there, like I said, it's a very remote area, and either you hunt fish or you're getting into trouble. And so what we're trying to do is encourage them to stay out of trouble, and music is one of the mediums that we use. And, of course, why do we play the music? Well, basically, it brings us enjoyment. But when I was growing up, music was always like the last thing. You know, we wake up early in the morning, and what we do is, I grew up on a certified organic farm in South Kona. And so
my job was to, of course, feed the animals and then pick the vegetables for our daily meals. And that's basically that whole idea of gathering not only food, but all the resources that we have there on the Big Island, and learning how to utilize it to its best advantage, yeah, and then also using it as a teaching medium for the kids. And it's a lot of times you think that you're going there to teach. What you find out is that by sharing the experiences, they've some of the experiences that they already that they've encountered and how they live. And I mean, some of my smoked meat recipe comes from a kid down in South Kona. He's a grandson of Auntie Margaret Machado in Kona. And also there's another boy, he's from Pahala area, and he shared with me his different recipes from his grandmother, including everything from pickled mango to, you know, sweet potato pudding. Ooh. And kulolo. Oh. And kalua pig and huli huli chicken and all that stuff. In fact, one of the things I'm really excited about is one of the schools was throwing away this big mechanical machine, and it was something for stirring something in the chemistry class, and they were going to throw it out. And I said, well, me being the recycler, you know, I talked to my friend, I said, hey, you should grab that, you know, and I think we can make a huli huli machine out of that. And lo and behold, earlier this year, we did our first huli huli pig, and it was great. It was awesome.
Man, all this talk, Keoki, you're making me really hungry.
Oh, that's why I had to eat before I came. I stopped off at the Watsonville Farmers Market and got myself some chicken quesadilla and chili verde. Oh.
How was it? You know, you travel a lot of places around the world with playing music and singing songs and stuff. How is our local Spanish Mexican food?
Very authentic.
Oh, good.
And that's what I like about being able to travel all around the world is it gives me ideas, too, and it inspires me to start sharing. You know, in Hawaii, we not only have Hawaiians, but we have Hawaiian, Japanese, Chinese, sure, you know, Filipino, Spanish, Haole. All of these influences help to make what we call a Hawaiian lifestyle to today. You know, I've learned so many different things about hunting from Portuguese. I've learned a lot of my cooking style from the Filipinos and the Chinese, mostly because, like I said, I'm a avid recycler, and I used to raise domestic hogs, but now I'm doing a trapping business where I catch wild pigs, feed them macadamia nuts and sweet potatoes, and make pork sausage. Wow. And then also catching goats now. Some of my students are really into goat hunting. And so we gather up the goats, and then we make all kinds of different dishes. My favorite now that we're getting ready to put on the market is our famous island goat jerky.
Wow. And oh, man.
I know. And actually, we're going to be doing all of this, too, at the workshop. We do cooking classes. My friend, who's the 5-time Sam Choi Poke Contest winner, 5 years in a row,
wow,
will be there doing a fish cutting demonstration for, you know, the day, and then making his famous poke dishes, our raw fish dishes.
Yeah.
And then a good friend of mine will be coming from Waipio Valley doing a poi making demonstration. And we'll get our hands a little dirty, you know, and going out into the garden. And also, because I'm so much into the lifestyles thing, we also do our own dressing of a lot of animals, too. So, you know, and it's and then by doing that, you realize that you can utilize everything.
Everything.
It's just a matter of, you know, having the knowledge, and then having that knowledge is important, but sharing that knowledge is just as important.
Yeah. Well, Keoki, it sounds like you're really a man of the 21st century in that.
I think I'm back in the 17th century, but living now in the 21st.
Well,
you know?
In the 21st century, what I meant by that is that you recognize the importance of conserving resources, making use of everything that you happen to touch, and having no waste. And that's certainly, back in the 17th century, it was that way just because that's the way it was. You mm-hmm. People didn't have anything. Now it's getting back that way again, hopefully, because that's the way it has to be.
It needs to be. We are in dire straits, and if people don't think that we don't need to, you know, renew, reuse, and recycle, they're crazy. Because we in Hawaii, we're in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. Where does the Opala go? We don't have any place to send it. It stays right there with us. So we need to be a little bit more akamai about things. And I'm learning myself. You know, we were into, you know, a lot of different farming techniques. And, of course, when I grew up, everything that came onto the farm stayed on the farm, including plastic bags, paper bags, you know, bottles, cans. In fact, you know, by mistake, we found out that we were doing something really good, but not knowing it. And it was under an orange tree, and it was my uncle, granduncle's favorite orange tree, and had the sweetest oranges, the most beautiful oranges, and they kind of look like the ka'u orange, if any of you are familiar with that orange. But the thing about it is that it just had this wonderful juiciness and flavor. It was just perfect. And so he used to take all of his fruits and vegetables to the state fair in Oahu, and every year he would win for his bananas and for his oranges. And so one day we were wondering what was the secret, and just so happens that, you know, the thing about this orange tree is that nobody liked to walk around or under that orange tree because it had all these rusty metal cans and pipes and everything like that. And come to find out, all those metal cans were leaching iron. And that iron and then the phosphorus and everything else that was being thrown in there, along with all the fish scales and, you know, all of the entrails and all of that stuff, was being recycled. And lo and behold, that's what made that orange tree so good. But the thing is, it's so dangerous. You look at there, it's like walking through, you know, a little minefield of metal, you know.
Right.
But yeah. That's how I grew up, you know. And I mean, being in South Kona, I graduated in 88. We didn't have running water till 1991. And the first time we had flush toilet in South Kona was, about the same time, about 1990. And, you know, that's how we lived. And part of the thing was that my dad is an early riser. So he'd get up really early, and we'd do all of our farming before 10 o'clock. By 10 o'clock, the day's over. You know, we get up about 4:30, 5 o'clock, do all of the chores. And then by 10 o'clock, you know, it's hot.
Yeah.
Nobody likes, and that's the thing about Hawaiians. We smart. We don't like work when it's hot.
Oh,
that's why we could never get any of us to work in the plantations. Because we looked at that and we thought that was crazy. Why would you slave under the hot sun in the dust and the dirt when you could, you know, do it in the coolness of the night under the full moon? You know, and so a lot of that information, too, is things that we feel is so important to pass on.
Well, I certainly understand what you're talking about, the heat. When I have small, well, not so small, actually, 10-acre piece of property in Honau now.
Yeah.
It's really wonderful. It's on the west side, of course. It's about 1,300 feet, so I look out at a glorious sunset every evening. I make it a rule that I have to stop work by 5 o'clock, and I have to catch that sunset because it's there for me to take advantage of and to enjoy. And if I don't do that, it's wrong. It's just wrong.
Well, you know, back in high school when I lived in South Kona in Kealia, one of the things that my friends would always call me, because I lived up here in Berkeley and in Oakland with my mom back in like the mid-80s. And my friends would call me on the phone and say, "Oh, what are you doing right now?" I said, "Oh, I'm here in Kona. I'm watching the sunset." And I describe it to them on the phone. They're going, "Really? Really? Oh." And I actually, it was, you know, I tricked three of my high school buddies to come down and spend time at the farm. And they had a really Hawaiian experience for sure, because they worked on that farm for 8 weeks during that summer. And while I was going to summer school. So
cool. Okay, you are your father's son. I know my good friend, Brother Timmy Hunt.
We know Tim. Grill.
Sure. Timmy was over, well, a couple of years ago he was over, and he went to see your dad. And I said, "How was it visiting Uncle George?" And he goes, "Oh, man, he worked me. He wonderful guy. He knows so much. He's done everything. He can sing about everything. But you go visit him, man. He works you.
He puts you to work. Oh, might as well."
Yeah. Well,
that's what they call the learning experience through osmosis.
You bet. And Timmy's turning into a good farmer now. What Timmy's doing? He heard about and read about the demise of the Willy Willy tree.
Yes.
And somehow He got hold of 5,000 seeds, mm-hmm. and he's propagating them in his backyard here in Santa Cruz.
Wow. Hey, he doesn't watch out now. The Department of Agriculture may not hear about that. No,
his name is actually... I hope that's not a problem. But nah. That's your dad's fault. He turned Timmy into a horticulturist and a gardener and a farmer. So,
well, that's cool.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, it is.
Thing.
It's all good. I mean, I know people up here get all kinds of stuff. It's no. I know that somewhere here in Santa Cruz, there are 900 pounds of emu stones sitting in someone's yard because my dad used to do these parties up here, and he wanted to do the Kalua pig. The problem up here is that your rocks are a lot different from our lava rocks in Hawaii. So if any of you out there know where I can find those lava rocks from my dad's emu, you can call 808-960-8385. Mahalo.
He brought his own emu stones over
here? My dad made me send them. Remember when you could send up three bags and a minimal maximum 70 pounds?
Yeah.
Every time my dad would make me send up two coolers of rocks, 70 pounds, 140 pounds every time. And then the guys, God. The security, they'd be looking, what is that in there? Are you carrying rocks? Well, yeah, that's rocks. It's for the emu. And they just shake their head and say, okay.
Your dad cracks me up. I went to your stepbrother's college graduation in the spring. Timmy invited me to come along with him and help carry over.
Jeffrey's
graduation. And your dad brought so much food over that he had prepared over in Maui. And then,
actually, he made me prepare it and send it to him.
Oh, okay.
That's true. Okay.
And in one cooler was the head of a pig, which totally blew my mind. I mean, it's great. I love it. I did an emu myself a few years ago in my property in Honolulu. That wasn't shocking, but I was going, how do you get the head of a pig through customs? But I guess if it's cooked and on ice, it just no problem.
Well, thank goodness for technology and learning the curing process of handling pork and things like that. All we do is we do a kalua, and that's the best part. Don't tell anyone. We're not supposed to talk about the cheeks, That's the pork cheeks and the ears. Of course, my dad's favorite is the tail, So.
Well, the people who actually live there know the best. I know that I lived in Japan for 10 years. And I know the very, very best part of the tuna is the fatty underbelly.
Oh, the belly, yeah.
Yeah, is just the toro, it's called. And the very best part. And most people who just go to the restaurants never know about that. But, so.
There's nothing like doing it yourself, too, and watching and observing. A lot of it is, it's just like, it's almost like doing a kata. What I mean? Or doing an exercise.
Yes.
And the more and more you do it, the better and better you get at it. But there's always room for learning new techniques of doing this, to get the finished product. And that's really what I'm after right now in my lifetime, is to hopefully find out other new and inventive ways of thinking to make what we do a little bit easier,
Well, that's amazing. We should be doing some music, and I noticed that you have an ukulele sitting there.
Yeah, I got my ukulele.
Your ukulele. Would you grace us with a song or two?
That heat. I wanna go back to my little grass shack in Kealakeku, Hawaii. I wanna be with all the kane and wahine that I used to know.
so long ago, and I can hear the old guitars a-playing on the beach at Honaunau. And I can hear the old Hawaiian saying, e komo mai no kaua I ka hale ka vela ka hau, it won't be long before my ship will be sailing back to Kona. Oh, it's a grand old place that's always fair to see. You're telling me I'm just a little Hawaiian and a homesick island boy. I wanna go back to my fish and port. I wanna go back to my little grass shack in Ke ala ke kū Hawaii. I wear the humuhumu nuku nuku apua goes by. Where the humuhumu nuku nuku apua goes by.
You're making me want to go back to my little grass shack. Actually, I've got a home in Honaunau that has no walls. Well, it's got a wall on the mountain, Mauna Loa side, because so much of the weather comes down.
You got a good
mountain.
Mosquito net, though, right?
No, it's at 1,300 feet.
Oh, it's
cool enough that the mosquitoes, no mosquitoes.
Oh, you lucky.
I'm really lucky. Wow, that was great, Keoki. Thank you so much for that. That was really wonderful. Now, we've got one of your past...
Auntie was part of our workshop participants.
Right. She had told me with great anticipation about the workshop that she was going to go, and she's going, oh, I'm not sure I have the money to go. I really want to go, but can I take the time off work? But I really want to. And then finally she said, hell, I'm going. And when I got over to Hawaii, I called her up. I knew she was there, and I called her up, and she was just... in seventh heaven. Well, can you tell us a little about it, Kapua?
It was the most wonderful musical experience. I play slack key guitar and ukulele. They had beginning and intermediate classes, and I took them all. I took the Oli class in the morning, and I took beginning intermediate ukulele in the morning, followed by beginning and intermediate slack key in the afternoon. In between, Keoki fixed us, oh my God, the most incredible meals. I mean, you don't go hungry in Pahala when Keoki's in the kitchen. I'm telling you what, we had every kind of food under the sun, and everything was just, oh no, it was so good. Evening time, we had a Hawaiian language class and choir. And people who don't even sing were in this choir, and they were all singing four-part harmony. It was so wonderful. Like Bill says, I'm still talking about it 2 years later. What a wonderful time I had there. The teachers, everybody from... Keoki is a wonderful teacher. Herb Ota Jr., Sonny Lim, George Sr.,
Uncle
David Kamakahi.
Uncle John Keawe was there?
John Keawe. I mean, the most wonderful musicians you can imagine teaching these classes.
I think that year, too, you were there the second year, right? Is that correct?
Or 2007.
Yeah, so that was the second year of our event. And that year, I believe, Auntie Diana Key was there.
Oh, my God, Diana Aki. I've been a fan of her since forever.
Yeah.
She used to work with your dad.
Exactly.
There, and I couldn't wait to meet her. And oh my God, she's amazing.
And, well, one of the things about the workshop, too, is that I was so inspired by the response that we had. So we put together a nonprofit for it called the Center for Hawaiian Music Studies. And what that's allowed us to do now is because we're a nonprofit, we're able to get grants and funding to help. Actually for the fees for like the kids that want to participate. Not only that, but you know, in Kau'u, if you've ever been to Kau'u, it's a really remote district and not much there. And so one of my goals was to get more ukuleles into the hands of the kids. And last year, because of the ukulele guild on the island of Hawaii, Brother Gerald Santiago and Mr. Gleason from Pegasus Ukuleles, they, and of course the guild members, built for me 25 ukuleles.
Wow.
And the requirement was that the kids had to show up for their classes, make sure that they did their assignments for ukulele. And if they participated in all of their classes and showed up and did what they were supposed to do, they each received a custom koa ukulele, which was really nice. And that's been our goal, is to get, instead of the kids, you know, carrying around guns or knives or drugs or whatever it might be, have them carry an ukulele, you know.
I have to say, I was very inspired by the work you're doing with these kids in Pahala. They are some of the most wonderful young people I've ever met. And just good musicians, too.
Yeah, well, not much, you know, we don't have, I think Game Boys are just starting to happen over there, you know, those kinds of PlayStation and things like that. But the kids love the music, and that's one of the things that brings them together. You know, we still have, you know, everybody, like any school, wherever you go across the country, there's always little cliques and people have their groups. But as soon as you take out those instruments and you lay out some song sheets for them, some common songs, whether it be Hawaiian or not, you know, and you get them playing together, all of a sudden they forget about what they're arguing about, you know, 10 minutes earlier before class was. And they're able to set aside their differences and actually resolve some things through the music. And that's a really powerful tool when you think about it, you know, giving them an opportunity to voice themselves through the music. And it's really, I feel so blessed, and I really feel it's just Akua, you know, through me, allowing me to be a part of this, because it's, for some reason, I always knew that I was going to be a teacher. From the time I was 7 years old, I was already teaching things for my dad, whether it was, you know, agriculture or fishing or hunting or whatever it might be. And lo and behold, when I first moved back to Hawaii, I was teaching or coaching gymnastics. So I was a gymnastics instructor. And then when I got back into agriculture, I was coaching animal husbandry through the 4-H livestock program. You know, it was one day my dad called me up and he said, "Son, you got to come and play music with me." And I said, "Why?" He said, "Because your uncle just quit." I was like, "So?" And he said, "Well, son, the gig calls for a duo, and your other uncles and your cousins are all busy during that day, so you're hired." And so through that experience, you know, if it wasn't for my dad taking the time and being patient with me and actually understanding the importance of really what we're doing and helping me to develop this love for music. In the beginning, it was really rough for me, you know. I started out with one string. Most people know about the story, how my dad cut off my strings and turned off my microphone and made me lip sync for, you know, 2.5 hours. And and you get through it. Well, you can go read my dad's book. It's called A Hawaiian Life. We don't need to go there today.
Okay.
It's it was through those experiences on learning what they call the hard way, you know, because I was a really hard-headed kid, and I still can be hard-headed sometimes. But through those experiences is what I draw my knowledge from, and then I'm able to let it go and pass it out. And it's one of the things that, you know, we take it for granted, you know, the information that we have. And if it's not Akua using you, he's going to use somebody else. So I just feel that I happen to be at the right place at the right time, because that's what Akua has set before me. And right now I'm kind of on this journey right now. I'm still searching, like most people, but the music has been such a wonderful guide for me, because, you know, music stimulates all different kinds of emotions, different thought patterns. It makes you think. And at the same time, not only from your head, and not only in your hands, but from deep inside in your heart. And that's what's the most important, because I think people forget what really the true spirit of aloha really is all about. It's about, you know, really setting aside some of whatever it is that you, turmoil that you might have or all the troubles that you might have, and looking beyond yourself and being able to say, "Hey, this is something that might be able to help someone else in their life, in their lifetime." And I've kind of been following that path, and it's really been a wonderful experience. You know, a few a few months ago, I was going through some really hard times, like most people are. I mean, right now with the economy, with what it was, and myself, I'm still, you know, growing in this music industry, and sometimes it's easy to get depressed, you know what I mean? And I went through this huge time of depression, you know, and this was just a few months ago. And one of the things that really helped me get out of that was the music. And sometimes you have to leave home in order to appreciate it that much more. And so that's why actually I'm here. I'm so homesick right now. I'm waiting to go home for my teriyaki pork plate, you know.
Stop down at the grill.
I was just going to say that. Stop by the grill and eat some of Timmy's.
Oh, yeah. We're going to do that for sure.
Okay, good. I should remind listeners of what they're listening to and who we are. This is KAPULP 104.7 on your dial from Watsonville, where we are so fortunate to have in studio two of my favorite people. One of these people I get to see once every couple of years, and that's Keoki Kahumoku from the Big Island of Hawaii, who's a wonderful, as you know probably if you're listening to this program or if you listen to me very much, I play him all the time. He's a wonderful ukulele player, guitar player, jokester, kind of a kolohe. He and Herb Ota Jr. get together and no telling what's going to happen. and the other person is lovely Kapua, who has been my friend for about the last 4 or 5 years, I guess, by now. And she's a lover of Hawaiian music. She dances beautifully. She sings beautifully. Plays a great ukulele and guitar. So we're all sitting here having a wonderful time in the studio, just talking about hunting pigs and talking about the wonderful work that Keoki's doing.
Yeah, Hawaiian lifestyle. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, the lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned a little bit ago about grandson of Auntie Margaret Machado's.
Yeah.
Is that the Auntie Margaret of Lomi Lomi Massage?
Yes,
down,
that's
down
exactly.
In K.A. Beach?
K.A. Beach, yes.
K.A. Beach. Oh, I used to go down there every time I'd go back to the island.
Well, her grandson... they call him a junior,
uh-huh.
And her other grandson, Shuckster, but they're from their last name is the Kekoa Ohana, and they actually were the ones that taught me how to make Portuguese sausage from one of their family recipes. And when the boys were growing up, their father had passed away when they were young, but was able to pass on some of his hunting skills to his children. And I guess he had 5 kids. And I was so impressed by this. I guess the junior was at the time about 17 years old, and his younger brother was about 13. And they showed me how to whip out 550 pounds of sausage, you know, in one afternoon. It was,
wow.
It was good. And that's, for me, that's the kinds of things that I enjoy doing, learning.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot, and now, you know, we're making our own sausage too. And in fact, some of the products that I have, catching wild pigs has now turned into something really good. They're all natural, macnut fed wild pork from the Big Island, and it's now being sold in KTA superstores.
Oh, fantastic!
Yeah,
fantastic. That's KTA cool. Is a great store. I'm glad
all the local stuff over there. You know,
yeah, it's best. That's one of the things I do when I'm on my property in Honolulu. There's a Choice Mart nearby, which mm-hmm. is good, and they're getting more good food all the time.
Yeah, and good variety now.
Yeah. It used to be you couldn't even get any cheese mm-hmm. or anything, but they're getting more and more good food all the time. But whenever I go up to Kailua Kona, which I tried not to go too often because I just didn't want to go into town, but if I go up there, I always had to stop it. KTA Markets, because they've got the best.
Yeah.
Yeah, really good. Listen, how about, we've been talking about hunting and hunting pigs and stuff. One of my favorite songs that you do is...
The Hunting Brown Dog.
Hunting Brown Dog, yeah.
Oh.
would you mind if I play
that? Yeah, go for it.
You know, we've got that here. We've got that here, and I'd like to play that for the listeners in case you don't remember this. And this is Keoki. What album? Oh, this is Liko.
This is from my Liko album. This is actually my first solo album produced by myself and Daniel Ho from Daniel Ho Creations. And yeah, that was actually my first song that I ever wrote. And yeah, Hunting Brown Dog.
Yeah, it's a fun one.
And now my heart will beat
forevermore, dear. And your love that has gone away will come back to me. Eleanna, ikabili kayo ke alika. Enene, e mai kauala e pili. Ke kau mai iluna oka mahina. Kaua e ike, ikanani kai o ke alia.
Wow, that's great. There's Kealia that we were just talking about, the area, a song by Keoki.
No, actually, that was by my great-grandmother. My grandmother, Tutu Kokoho.
Oh, sorry about that. That song was actually by my great-grandmother, Tutu Kokoho.
She wrote that song, you mean?
Yes, back in the 1910.
Wow. Yeah. But that was you singing it, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was me singing it.
We were just talking about that here in the station, about the area where Keoki grew up. And I want to play one more song, one more recorded song of Keoki's, which is a song I've got on my cell phone. So that anybody who calls me from outside, calls my cell phone number, hears this song. I selected this about 3 or 4 years ago just because I really, really love it. And it's called Slack Key Circle Song.
Oh, cool.
Recognize that, Keoki?
Yes. Thank you.
Wow, that was Slacky Circle song. How did that song come about?
Actually, that song came about. I was inspired because of I remember what it was like when I was first learning how to play kiho'alu. And the thing about that song, it uses all the different elements and ornamentation of Slacky that's really commonly heard. The turnarounds, the little chimes, the slides, the pull-offs, the hammer-ons. And originally I had tabbed that song out for Slacky study, so that people, much like I was actually inspired by a good friend of mine, also a Slacky instructor, Ozzy Kotani.
Sure.
And that was one of my first inspirations to write a Kiho'alu Hawaiian Slacky song. And that song I actually dedicated to my students, because every time we get together, you know, there's certain things, you know, you do these jam circles, you know, and sometimes we just go out into these droning notes and just let the Slacky just keep rolling and rolling and rolling. And the thing about this song is it's, you can play it over and over again, and it's a continual loop is what it is.
Uh-huh.
And one of my students at the time that was learning Slacky from me, Brittany Paiva, during that time I was teaching her, and I was teaching about maybe 15 or 16 other kids how to play Slacky. And that's how that song actually came about, as inspiration for my teaching.
Well, now it's a Grammy Award winning song. That's
mahalo.
Fantastic. That's, and you know, as you said, many people around the world, I bet, have that on their cell phones, just like I do.
Oh,
it's great.
Well, mahalo. Thank you.
I'm so happy to have that. And anytime people, as I just said this off the air, but people sometimes call me and they say, Bill, is that something you recorded, that wonderful guitar music? I say, yeah, that was me. But they know I'm lying, because I could never do anything like that.
Oh, well, never say never.
Well,
you never know.
You know, another one of your guests, Kona Bob, tried to encourage me one time.
That's my good friend, Kona Bob Stouffer.
What he's done for the Big Island with his website.
Yes.
It's one of the things that first turned me on to the Big Island. And Kona Bob's a great, great guy. And I was writing back and forth to him about some other things, and I said something about, boy, I wish I could play the ukulele. And he said, hey, don't wish, do it. And I said, nah, I'm too old to learn something like that. And he says, you're never too old. And started getting on my case, and so I stopped writing him. Nah, joking. But yeah, you
well,
have a
actually
cast.
Kona Bob will be there also at our workshop, and he will be teaching steel guitar along with Sonny Lim, and he'll also be teaching the walking stick bass.
Yeah,
so he'll be there this year again, and I'd like to say a warm mahalo to Kona Bob and Shirley. They're in Kona. Mahalo to them for helping out. And you can actually check it out on konaweb.com/Kiyoki. And it has registration forms on the Kona Web.
Great. And while you're there at konaweb.com, you can also check on what the walking stick bass is, if you don't happen to know. It's a
portable bass.
It's a portable bass. Basically, it's a stick, a walking stick. It's a wonderful, wonderful bass. And he's got some music there he's done, and on the website. And he's got some video of the walking stick bass. He's got everything on that website.
Yeah, I know that he has a lot of pictures, and I think he used to have a page with testimonies about the workshop from a lot of the students. I really like to say a wa mahalo to Kona Bob, and also to Lelehua Yuen. And because she also is helping me right now build our website for our nonprofit center for Hawaiian Music Studies.org. And we should have some information coming up on that real soon. And like I said, we got our workshop coming up. And this year we've got one of my instructors that gave me my first formal Slacky guitar lesson, my Uncle Moses Kahumoku, will be teaching this year also. Not only I asked him to do Slacky, but I also taught. Asked him to do net weaving. So he's going to be teaching people how to repair throw nets. So that'll be something fun. Yeah, we're going to have a good time.
Oh, it's just going to be a living encyclopedia, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And so many things. I'm looking forward to Uncle John Chiave and Uncle Dennis will be doing our songwriting. And of course, because we have the furlough now, so in Hawaii for the public schools, so my dad will be coming out Friday, Saturday, Sunday on both weekends to come and join us for the workshop.
Oh, great. Will John's beautiful wife Hope be there?
Oh, Auntie Hope is, you know, every year, Auntie Hope is just a lovely, she's just a wonderful person. And she has this, really this, I love being around her.
Me too.
Because she just has this infectious smile. And the thing about her is you can tell when she's serious and she, you know, and she has this, just this presence about her. And she reminds me of like being around a lot of my aunties and my all the women in my life, like, you know, almost like a Hanai mother.
Mm-hmm.
And she's always asking me, you know, how am I doing? And she's, and of course, you know, they take care of their mo'opuna.
Yeah.
And she's still able to take care of her mo'opuna, take care of Uncle John, and do hula and help, you know, in any way that she can. And
she's the one actually who inspired John to get out and keep going with the music. He was part of what was the Homestead,
John
Cavi Homestead Gang or something.
Yeah, right,
his first band, and then he didn't want to go solo. He didn't think he had a good voice, and he didn't think he was ready, and she just encouraged him.
I have to tell you, Uncle John can sing.
Oh, yes.
Yes, he can. And his first two CDs, he didn't sing at all, and I'm so glad that he's back singing again because he has a wonderful voice.
Oh, he does.
Uncle John actually wrote a song that we released on. We have an album that was done between the Hawaii Island Visitors Bureau and our nonprofit that raises money. The proceeds from the album is called Namele Moku Okiawe, Songs from Hawaii Island. And he wrote a song, Hawaii Island is My Home. And he wrote that song. I asked him to write a song. He wrote that song just for that.
For that album.
And then he also released it on his own album,
right,
too.
That was the name of his album.
I love that cut.
Yeah, it's a beautiful song.
Oh, it is great. Another one I like. I love that song by Lele Yuen, that Saddle Road.
Yeah.
If you've ever driven Saddle, I've never driven it on a motorcycle like she has.
Oh.
But I've driven it in the car a number of times.
Yeah.
Rental car, you're not supposed to do that.
No, but the roads are actually, for those of you, if you have a chance and you're going to the Big Island, the Saddle Road has been renovated and it's beautiful. Only the last part in between Waikiki and Waimea, that one small section there, maybe about eight miles or so, has not been renovated. But it's like what used to take, you know, an hour and a half now takes about 45 minutes, and it's kind of dangerous now because you're going right behind. Instead of you're in front of the military base, now you're in the back of it, and it's kind of neat. And you're actually driving right on the side of Mauna Kea now, which is, it's an interesting drive, and I'm really appreciative of being able to travel through that area.
Well, I didn't think it was that bad of a drive.
No,
but I was fortunate to get behind a school bus, and he kind of was driving the line.
Yeah,
I got behind.
My experience on Saddle Road was always that if the weather was nice, it wasn't foggy, wasn't rainy, you had plenty of gasoline and you weren't in a hurry, piece of cake, nothing wrong with the road at all. But the problem was, in those days, they would repave it every now and then, but they'd only repave one stripe down the center of the road.
Yes, down the center.
And so what you're supposed to do is be driving, so maybe your left wheels are on the nice part of the road and your right wheels, right tires, are on the funky part of the road, and nobody wants to do that, so you drive down the center. If you're coming down a hill and it's clear and nice, it's okay. But if it's foggy, there were a lot of accidents there for that reason.
Oh, yes, definitely. But in fact, recently, too, back in July, I had an accident up there. Some wild pigs or goats, I didn't see it fast enough, but they were running across the road, and had to pull off, took out part of the fence line. The fence that's supposed to, I don't know what it does. It doesn't keep anything out. You'll understand, for those of you that, if you haven't traveled that road, it's a fence that does nothing. But anyways.
Well, probably just keep all the Al-Qaeda off the military property or something. You know?
I think it's mostly, well, they say it's an animal ungulate fence to keep, well, it allows them to still cross the road but keeps humans from going into those areas. Or, I don't know.
Whatever.
We don't need to go there either.
No, we don't need to talk about that. But with the increasing worldwide popularity of Mauna Kea, of the observatory up there, and so many people come flying into Hilo and then driving up there, that part of the road is just gorgeous.
Yeah, they've really done a great job over there, and you know, as part of the, you know, it's a balance that we're living on, you know, or living with right now. It's a fine balance. So yeah, we do encourage, you know, the visitors, but we also, that's part of what we're trying to do too, is to be mindful of the things and how delicate the places are on the island of Hawaii. In fact, all of our islands in Hawaii have very unique qualities to them that need to be preserved. And, you know, as much as I love going out and looking at the stars and things like that, and they're planning all of these different things, new telescopes and, you know, coming up there. So, I mean, I can understand from different points of view, but you got to kind of understand, too, that it's very fragile.
Yeah.
And if you're not careful, something's got to give.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I think Hawaii has already given more than enough in terms of its own pristine purity, and some of the things that have happened to the islands with the coming of, well, have to say, call a spade, coming of the white man and all our great intelligence, and like bringing in the mongoose to control the rat population, all those preposterous things that we've done, which have so adversely affected the islands. And
well, actually, you know, I know the story behind that. You know why the mongoose actually came? It was because of during the vaqueros times. It wasn't actually, they didn't really bring the rats over to, bring the mongoose over to control the rats. A lot of the feed and the cattle, they stored, of course, inside of these big ships. Mm-hmm. Inside of the ships was lined with grasses from the mainland. A lot of times inside of that grass were snakes. And a lot of the seafarers knew that one way to control snakes was to keep pet mongoose. And, you know, I learned this actually through observation of some sailing stories that I was reading about. And that was one of the things, is that, you know, yeah, sometimes you take things out of proportion too, you know. But that's the one thing about Hawaiians or the mindset of people is, if, you know, life throws you lemons, you make lemonade.
Yeah.
Well, if they throw you kalo, you make poi. Same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to learn how to... We've been able to adapt to certain situations. And at the same time, we need to be mindful of these things that are... Absolutely. All the changes that are happening around us. And if we don't take the time to act... To just think about it, sometimes it can really get out of control. For example, we got this, we're inundated right now in all the districts of the island with these croaky frogs. And they want to introduce bugs to get rid of our strawberry guava, you know. And, you know, I can't say that I've taken a stance either one way or the other, but I do know that it's an issue that really needs to be addressed. And but more than that is that we need to take care of our people there.
Yeah.
That's really
absolutely
the most important.
On that note, I think we're going to give you a big mahalo, Keoki, from the people in Kapu Land from here in Watsonville. And
mahalo, Watsonville, and Santa Cruz, and the Bay Area.
Well, the Monterey Bay Area loves you, Keoki, and we're so happy to have you here, even if it's only for a few minutes this afternoon, and we're looking forward to that. We were talking off the air a bit. I've heard that you and your dad and the Kamakahis are going to be doing a tour.
Yeah, we're looking at in March. If you want information regarding our tour schedule coming up, you can go to hawaiimusiclive.com or kahumoku.com and get more information regarding the tours up and coming, new CD releases, and, of course, workshop information.
That's great. I noticed on Facebook that Reverend Dennis Kamakahi had mentioned that come spring, March, I guess, they're doing the father and son tour. And I don't know any two pairs of fathers and sons who are more musically talented, more spiritually connected, and more just people of the earth than the Kamakahis and the Kahumokus.
Oh, mahalo. We're very, very blessed. Thank you for that.
And we're blessed for having you as a friend. So thank you so much for being here with us, and I think we'll just close out with one more song.
Here we go. We'll sing one.
Okay, great.
E Hawaii e kuone hanau e ku home kula ivi nei oli no wau I na pono lani e E Hawaii, aloha e. E hau oli e nā o pi o Hawaii ne. E oli e, oli e, oli e, oli, oli e. Mai nā ahe, ahe makani e pā mai nei. Mau ke aloha, loha vai. E hau oli e nā o pi o Hawaii nei. Oli e. Oli e, oli oli e, mai nā ahe ahe makani e pā mai nei. Mau ke aloha, aloha i. Mau ke aloha, aloha.
Mahalo.